Welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast, a podcast incorporating narratives about facing and navigating adversity, a mixture of people, their experiences, and professional psychological discussion. I'm Dr. Tara Quinterillo. I'm a qualified and regulated psychologist with over 20 years' experience of mental health, disability, and human behaviour. I want to share people's stories of navigating adversity in the hope that through being heard, a dose of compassion and some understanding, we can help others in the face of adversity too. Hi, and welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. This is a really exciting one. So I got to meet this lady at Christmas at a psychologist meetup. I have Dr. Mia Hobbs with me. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are. What brought you on today?
So it's lovely to be here. My name is Dr. Mia Hobbs. I'm a clinical psychologist and I work in private practice in West London, mainly with children and young people and their families. And I also have another part of my work life that is about the therapeutic benefits of knitting. So that is what I believe we're going to be talking about today. So I've got my own podcast called Why I Knit, where I interview people about why they knit and how knitting benefits their mental health. And also have an audio course for people looking to use knitting for their self-care and do workshops and various things along those lines.
It's all sorts of stuff that I didn't know either. So I followed your work for a number of years because I think originally I came across your work in the pandemic through a kind of a mutual colleague of ours. And it's just been on my radar because I see you on my social media feed. I got to meet you in person at Christmas, which was lovely at an event. But let's start then with the... How does knitting become therapeutic for you? Let's start with your kind of journey. Because some people might go, knitting, psychology, therapy, how does it all tie up?
Yeah, and I think it actually took me kind of an embarrassingly long time to put those things together too, actually. Like, I think I started knitting because of being like just in a quite crafty family, I guess. So I was exposed to the idea of it on some little Donald Duck needles as a seven-year-old or something like that. And it's the kind of thing I think many knitters talk about having returned to it a few times or having a family member who has taught them. But really, I started to kind of knit on a regular basis during my doctorate in clinical psychology. And my mum had just said to me, she'd met someone who'd done the same course. And this woman who was doing her clinical training had learned to bricklay because she had this really strong desire to do something completely unrelated to psychology. She said, my mum said, you know, you need to learn to knit. And I was like, sure, whatever. So I just did it to kind of please her, really. And then when I was getting the train back to London, we stopped in John Lewis, bought some yarn and needles, and she showed me a very simple shawl pattern. And I was doing some exams at the time. And actually, this shawl was really good timing because, or a good project, because it started with like 5 stitches and it's in a triangle. So the triangle gets wider. So as my kind of ability and confidence grew, the triangle was also growing outward. So a row would take longer and longer each time because it had more stitches on it, because that's how the pattern was designed. So that turned out to be a really good project because I was getting a sense of achievement quite quickly early on when I needed it because I was not a knitter really. And I found it was such a lovely break and antidote to academic work at the time. And I think actually in hindsight, I realized even during my undergraduate degree, I was doing other crafty things as kind of a stress relief, I suppose. Yeah. So I would be the kind of weird person who would have revised early. And by the night before an exam, I was like cooked, like I couldn't do any more revision, but I'd be doing cross stitch in my room because, you know, it's not the cool thing to, you know, the cool people are staying up all night the night before and they're definitely not doing cross stitch. So, I don't know that any of maybe my flatmates knew, but it was just, and I don't think I consciously was doing it as stress relief at the time, but it definitely served the purpose of like mindful movement in a way, like bringing my focus into this thing that was repetitive, it was soothing, and it was taking my focus away from the thinking about how the exam might go or any other stressful thing. So I think, and it was like a project that was only about enjoyment, like it wasn't about needing to do it for my job. It was a very different type of, but gave me a sense of achievement or joy. So I think also like during actually when I graduated from my clinical training, I really remember having a conversation with my friends who'd also been on the same course about the idea of we'd been striving for so long towards this goal of being a qualified clinical psychologist. Yeah. And we'd had little sub goals on the way. So we'd always got, oh, we've got that next essay, then I get the essay back and I've passed, phew. And then there's the next step on the ladder. And then once we were spat out the other end, we just didn't have, we were kind of achievement junkies with no fix. We didn't know what it was. And we were doing therapy, which, as you know, is not a very linear progress thing, because real life doesn't work like that. And then I think a few of us kind of had this feeling of like wanting something that was tangible, that you could make progress, you knew how it was going to end, and knitting fitted so nicely into that, that you could see your progress. Whereas in therapy, it was a bit more up and down and, you know, hopefully it's going in the right direction, but it might be quite a windy path kind of thing.
Yeah, and measures are more varied.
Yeah.
And I guess there's something that I always like to use that term, the kind of control agenda. So, you know, if you're kind of habit formation over those years and that doctorate were about those mini goals, you know, I can see a score, it's very visual, very contained. It could be quite destabilizing, I imagine, then when that ends. And for a lot of people listening in their lives, if there's something you've been working towards and that ends, having something that's very predictable, routined, so many elements, probably do about five episodes here. Yeah. Can deconstruct all those, but you know, the purposeful movement, but it's not being, you know, too conscious of it. Knitting can become quite automatic.
Yeah.
And when did you start to bring it into the kind of therapy room? So there's a kind of personal journey that you've had and what it provided for you, which I love, which I'm guessing then led you to thinking, how can we use that in other ways?
Yeah.
I work with the populations.
Yeah, I think that shifted when I left the NHS, really, because I think although I was having thoughts about it before I left, I didn't quite know how to make that happen in that context.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of pressure and not much kind of breathing space for creativity or innovation, sadly, at that point. And around that time, I also had a lovely project in work where there was somebody who was having twins, a colleague, and lots of people came up to me and said, oh, I'd love to knit something for these babies. And I was thinking, well, I'm not sure how many half knitted holy cardigans from non-knitters these babies need. So I coordinated us all to knit some blankets. So everybody made squares and I crocheted them together. And I could really see the impact on the team, actually. Wow. Like that people were having a break at lunchtime, just on a Friday, like maybe sitting down for 20 minutes and I could help them, or people would share stories about, you know, someone in their family who knitted, or they'd have a different conversation and sit together. Like sometimes in the garden, we sat and did our knitting. I and love that. It was like a joint project. And I really felt like it had a big benefit to the morale of the team, actually. Like we gained a lot, as much as the person who received the blankets. So that was really made me kind of highlighted to me how significant the impact could be for someone's mental health. And I think that was the first time I chose a project for myself that was intentionally to manage the transition for me of leaving the NHS, because that was not easy or planned, really.
Yeah.
I hadn't ever planned to leave. So then I kind of allowed myself, I bought this nice yarn and I made this shawl that was my transitional project to help me process that and also give me time and breathing space for the process of the change. And not to expect too much of myself, like having to be successful in private practice on day one, because that's not really realistic. So I think once I started to do that and once I got established in private practice, it felt more possible to be a bit more innovative. And I think I did still have worries that people would say, well, this is a bit weird. Like, why are you suggesting knitting?
So there's kind of inner critic that might rock up. And
But there was quite a lot of, you know, there are some research studies about people finding knitting beneficial. And often I would find the time it would come up. So I always bring it up. I think I bring it up with most of my clients now, but often I wait for the opportunity, something to arise that makes me think, oh, knitting could fit that. So often it might be maybe something like where we might use behavioral activation. So that's something we often talk about as psychologists when people are struggling with low mood, that one of the most helpful things we can do is to just do more things, and specifically things that either we enjoy, give us a sense of pleasure, or things that give us a sense of achievement.
Yeah.
And obviously knitting could fit both of those, tick both of those boxes. And unlike other hobbies, one of the key benefits, I think, is how accessible it is. So I've had many people on the podcast, on my podcast, who've said, well, I did it because what else can you do from your bed when you're really depressed? Or, you know, you can do it in teeny tiny increments, like two stitches takes, you know, less than 1 minute. And then you've made progress towards something that could eventually become a jumper or a scarf or a pair of mittens. So those are the situations where I might say, can I just tell you a little story about knitting and what sometimes that can can bring? And then often I end up talking to people about, so I work mainly with teenagers, so often they don't knit, sometimes they do.
Yeah, I was going to say, are there kind of differences in that generation? Because that's how we met and got talking, because usually you'll have some caregiver or grandma or someone along the way that's taught you how to knit. Yeah. If you're our generation.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see what the kind of younger generations think.
So some of them will kind of frown and they're like, no, I'm not doing that. And I say, okay, let me tell you a little bit about why I think knitting can be helpful. And then what we do is to have a conversation about what is there in your life that might give you a similar benefit. So sometimes there are things people are already doing, but they're not doing them intentionally. Yes. So the type of thing I've noticed people doing that might give them some of the same benefits of getting into the moment, focusing their attention on a thing, hopefully moving their body a little bit, so using their hands potentially, and bringing their focus into the here and now. So they're not thinking about, like, a lot of the misery we suffer in life is about worries about the future or thinking about the past. It's not so much usually about in the here and now. So, so things that people have talked about is things like doing Lego, baking, going for a walk. Somebody was doing something with circuit boards that I have no understanding of, but there was an element of creativity involved. It was, you know, trying things out that doesn't matter because it's not related to school or, you know,
moving purposefully, that it's routined. Yeah.
Kneading dough, like, I don't know, gardening, people have spoken about sewing, colouring. So often I help people think about what are you doing already that might give you some of those same benefits, and then we just try to do it a bit more intentionally. So think about, actually, if you know that thing is really hard that you've got to do that afternoon, you've got to go to that appointment, maybe do some baking in the morning beforehand or plan to go for a walk, and think a bit more about using those intentional things that give you a bit of kind of a mental break in a way. So I talk about it as like active relaxation when we're focusing, because often trying to relax and do nothing is actually hard, because that's when our brain
just
takes over.
Just chill.
Yeah. And then we end up going into this default mode network in our brains where things can get really scary because our brains are busy trying to predict the next disaster, or we're ruminating. And I think knitting is also great for rumination. That's the other time I often bring it up, is if somebody's struggling with really repetitive negative thoughts,
right,
that bringing your focus into the here and now can be really helpful in giving you a break and just slowing it down or turning off that voice. So that's the other thing I think often people on my podcast have mentioned, really finding it slows their thinking down, or it gives them a redirects their busy brain. So your brain can still be busy.
Stuff, actually. Yes.
Yeah. But it's busy doing something I like doing, or something just neutral.
So I often something around emotion regulation in there as well, while you're knitting.
And I think if we think about things like, you know, how EMDR therapy works, we can think about the, you know, we talk about the idea of like being able to tolerate the distress of a painful memory while you're using your working memory is busy doing something else. So I think there's lots of research that talks about people feeling like they are better able to manage life, or manage thinking about painful things, or, you know, the things that we go through in life where there isn't a solution or anything anyone can say, like bereavement and grief.
Absolutely.
That it's something that helps you to sit with those painful things and tolerate them.
Yeah. which is a lot better in the longer term for being able to process and work through that, rather than our kind of, we're a very quick fix society at the moment, aren't we? I get referrals, can we get rid of anxiety, get rid of low mood? How do I hurry up and get over this loss? You know, we don't want, who wants to sit with intolerable things? But if you have a means of helping you to do that in a more structured way, I think that's a pretty powerful start.
Yeah.
And it's really empowering. The other thing I thought about, it's really portable as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you can take it with you, but then there's also the kind of symbolism around that. I have it with me in my bag. And what does that mean?
And I always have, you know, like I did a few stitches while I was waiting for you to start the call. Yeah. You know, I have a project on my lap. And
so it's really just part of what you do. It's not just something you reach for. It sounds like that becomes more part of you, that knitting is something that's part of you, not that you just do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, there are so many benefits. You know, I had an amazing story shared with me on my podcast with a lady who had been taught to knit by a charity in the US called Project Knitwell. And they go into hospitals and started, actually, the founder had a baby who was in the NICU, had lots of operations and spent a lot of time as a parent sitting there being unable to do all the things you want to do for your new baby. And so she'd started this charity and they were going in and offering patients and family members, whoever was there, you know, would you like us to teach you to knit because you're sitting in this hospital? And this lady had a baby who was very premature and he was spent lots of time in the NICU. And she said that the people who taught her to knit felt as important in getting through that time as the doctors and nurses.
Wow.
For her. And she'd not been, she said she wouldn't consider herself a creative person. You know, she had not identified herself as a knitter. I'm not the kind of person who does that. And yet she said, I am quite good at just joining stuff. I just do what I'm told. And I thought that was amazing. Like, she found it such a powerful tool for tolerating this really difficult time and allowing her to sit with that.
And I love that you brought that in, because I'm thinking there may be people listening to this going, but I'm not. We do tend to have these kind of, you know, constructs about ourselves. I'm not artistic, or I'm not a knitter. I'm not, who may then just go, that's not going to be for me. And how we kind of just help people maybe rethink that. Have you worked with people where there has been that kind of initial, that's not me, I'm not a knitter, and then there's been a pathway into them discovering something new about
definitely
knitting?
People who've said no, there's no way I'm doing that, and then eventually have said, oh, go on then, teach me to knit, and have found it quite helpful. But I think, you know, it's not going to be for everybody, which is completely fine. But often the question I ask people is there something you used to do when you were younger? Because often we stop. Like, if I'm working with older teenagers, often they've ended up stopping their hobbies that they used to enjoy, or they just don't, you know, at secondary school, some of that creativity can fall away and I don't think there's much space for it, or they kind of get down to business and focus on exams. And I think that's when you need your hobbies more.
Because it's an automatic thing, isn't it? That should go, and I'll make time for study. But also, I'm just thinking about the pandemic as well, whether there's a certain kind of, you know, the certain pockets of people who impacted more, who may have had to stop doing certain hobbies and things and haven't picked them up. I'm sure that will resonate with many of us, actually.
And I felt so lucky, because I think many of us found out what was keeping us, like, feeling mentally balanced in the pandemic. Because I think all of a sudden you just take, because I think I was thinking about this conversation, I was thinking it's hard to evaluate the impact it's had on my mental health. It's a bit like, what would your mental health be like if you couldn't go for a walk? And to me, I guess it feels as basic and essential as that,
being a knitter. That in itself, that's quite profound, It plays that much of a part. It's that much of a kind of a stabilizer or a protective factor, I guess.
And I feel like I can feel in my body if I've had a day where I haven't knitted, a bit like, I imagine, I've never been a smoker, but I imagine there's a kind of urge.
It's like a visceral urge based. Absolutely. But also, that's quite good in helping, like you say, part of being a psychologist is helping the people we work with look at outcome measures, how we're going to know what's helping, what we need to refine, is kind of looking for those things as little markers. You know, how do you feel when you don't do something? And sometimes then may help you kind of work backwards to, actually, what does this do for me? And I love the point you made earlier as well, because I have a background in the NHS as well. When I worked in the NHS, there was obviously more rigidity over how we practice, time, there's just, you know, so many things. But you're kind of innovative. A lot of people in private practice, we have the luxury of being more innovative, we obviously have more autonomy, is how you've kind of brought that in then and kind of rethinking therapy psychology and being creative. And you know, there may be not just people who want to use it therapeutically themselves, but there may be other professionals, other therapists, counsellors, who kind of like this idea, but might also have that I'm not a knitter. So is it something you can bring in the therapy room if you're one of those people thinking, I'd like to?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of thinking about, you know, borrowing psychological theory and applying it to what we know about how people talk about knitting and how it benefits our mental health.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, so for example, as someone who works with teenagers, maybe it's easier for me because I think maybe with our kids, we do think a bit more about being creative in therapy or using different engagement techniques. But I think there have been kids who it's been absolutely transformative in terms of their ability to stay in the room. So, you know, young people who've come in as extremely reluctant customers and who've, you know, obviously I always want the young person to consent to doing therapy, but sometimes you might with the family agree, okay, well, let's just do some sessions and see if this feels like something they can use. And we agree they're going to come four times or something, but it's allowed somebody to stay there to have a conversation because it's not a problem focused conversation. And we can sit next to each other because I'm teaching you to knit. And we can focus. So while we can have some problem-focused talk, we can also regulate that by if that young person stops answering questions about school and starts asking me about knitting or my cardigan I'm wearing, then I think, okay, well, they've had enough of that. They want to talk a bit about the knitting. And we've had a project together in therapy where we've made squares and made a therapy blanket. And or people who are quite fidgety, who are struggling to know what to do with their hands, that it can feel quite soothing to have something to work with their hands. So I think, you know, A, there has been a lot of anecdotal evidence and some research evidence that knitters find it therapeutic. But I think we've been able to kind of draw on psychological theory and find ways of bringing it into the therapy room that feel like they're just creative and helpful without really changing the talking therapy that we're doing, which remains the same, but we're using knitting as an added tool or a way to illustrate something.
And you know, as a counselling psychologist, it's made me think about the dynamic. So there's the kind of two things have come up for me today because I'm learning loads. This is very new for me. Is there's the kind of outcome, what it does to help you regulate emotions and tolerate, but also what it might do for the therapy dynamic. So some people who may, you know, from teenagers to adults, you may pull away because they just find it too directive or too much. But actually how you can kind of be creative in supporting the dynamic to help the therapy progress, to help them feel safe, which I hadn't thought about as well, actually. There's something very powerful.
I think also in between sessions, people have found it helpful.
Yeah.
You know, when you've got maybe a bit of a gap in therapy or that it's a bit like a transitional object, like something somebody takes away, they work on it at difficult times, they then bring it back and show you what they've done, or, you know, it's something for them to hang on to literally. And a reminder of their progress.
Yes, I was going to say it's there as this visual reminder, but also your relationship with. So I do a couple of exercises, do a lot of ACT therapy, and sometimes I give people a piece of paper and we do an exercise about tolerating different things and the paper representing that. But then they keep that piece of paper and I want to look at their relationship with it, where they put it. Some people put it in the bin, get it back out again, put it in their car with them. But actually, the knitting, the same thing, that relationship with the knitting. Do they bring it back with them? Have they had times where it's been put away in a drawer for a few days? But what you can also maybe learn and understand from their relationship with the knitting as well. I'm already a convert, you can see. because I think I have a background in learning disabilities as well, so the kind of creativity in therapy is very aligned with me. You know, using new ways to help people to feel safer and dynamic, but also to get that progress and that outcome that they want.
And I think there's lots of the creative types of, like, so knitting and other creative therapies that allow connection outside of therapy too. So, you know, showing it to your grandma who also knows how to knit, and then that having a different conversation, or having someone you text a picture of the cake you baked to and they say, oh, that looks amazing, or you get positive social feedback as a result, or you knit a scarf for your dad, or, you know, it also invites connection, I think, and things like being in a group. I think lots of people talk about it feeling easier to join a knitting group because there's no eye contact expected. There's a topic of conversation that's already there.
Absolutely. There's a framework, but it takes away a little bit, like the kind of walk and talk sessions that I do. It takes away some of those barriers to people maybe not engaging in the first place or disengaging.
Yeah. I read a research study recently about somebody talking about it as like the knitting being the WD-40 in the kind of conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because people like something to come back to, don't they? Absolutely. But also because I have a lot of people I've worked with who just go to various knitting groups, and it's just funny. I'm just starting to make the links now of actually what those groups provide for them in addition to the knitting, the safe space, the fact everyone sits in the same chairs, but you have these conversations that lead to other things. But as you say, sometimes if a conversation is becoming too much or they've reached saturation point, you come back to the knitting and it's a little bit easier to manage. It's less confrontational. Isn't it? One of the things that we were kind of just talking about when we were emailing about this is the idea of kind of micro gains, that how you can build in these kind of little small elements to make bigger overall change. And I hadn't also twigged that knitting is the perfect example of that, isn't it?
Well, that was the thing that I immediately thought about when I saw the first of your posts about your book on micro gains.
We need 51 now. I'm gonna have to add an extra.
Yeah.
We need to do the next 50 and add that in.
Was just how, like, I guess there's two ways I think about knitting. Is A, it's, I think, is a hobby I've been able to continue because of how you can do it in very small increments. And I think that makes it accessible if you're talking to somebody who's feeling really low in mood. They're probably not going to go and play tennis, or, you know, you need a chunk of time. Like, I relate it to, you know, I also dress, make and sew clothes on a sewing machine. I just don't do that anywhere near as often because I have to get out of a cupboard, find a space. I need at least an hour. I need to thread the machine. Whereas knitting, it's just in my bag. I can just grab it. I can do it in the dentist, on the bus, you know, and that makes all of the tiny little pockets of time. They can all just add up to a bigger project. And it's a great, you know, real tangible reminder that those small habits, so it's also a great metaphor, I think, for the power of micro gains.
Yeah.
Because it's made up of tiny stitches. There's no one of those stitches that's more important than the others. Like, it just is, all of them have to be there. Otherwise the whole thing unravels.
There's no shortcuts, quick fixes, which is some kind of mental health on social media now is still very much about quick fixes, and it doesn't work.
And it's just doing the work every single day. And, you know, I have projects like this scarf I'm knitting right now. I've knit several things. I can show you for the
I was going to say, yes, it's right for us to see.
So this is just like, I like to have a simple project that's on my
See, to me, I just think that's incredible, but to your level, it's simple.
But it's the thing that's small. Because I've got other sweaters on the go and they've got too many balls of yarn attached, or they're too big to carry around to the swimming lesson Whereas this one can just sit in my bag, and then somebody was late to an appointment and I don't have a laptop with me in my workplace of work, so then I just do, you know, half a row even, or I'm sitting with my kids while one of them wants to chat while they're in the shower, and I do that. Or,
but you're present, you're not on a phone scrolling, which
if I was on my phone mentally, I've left the building. Whereas if I'm knitting, my hands are busy, so I don't feel so restless, or that I should be using my time more effectively.
Which is a parent, we might be able to scoot around the kitchen or the rest of the bathroom while you're in, which is very normal, but what does that pause do?
Yeah, or just sitting with my coffee and doing in the mornings. So I think, it's just a reminder of all of those tiny. I interviewed someone recently who called it, I've knitted that entirely in the in-betweens, which I loved.
There's a book title there somewhere for you, I'm sure. But I like, because it's the slowing. So some of the stuff around micro gains I've done before is this kind of purposeful slowing down, pressing pause. And I guess with knitting, you can speed up, slow down, but it also makes you press pause.
Yeah.
So I'm a parent and I know if my kid's in the shower, I could quickly clean this, move around, scoot around, do so many things, but no, you know, and what's the purpose of it? Why press pause? Why do that knitting in the in-betweens and not do the other stuff? What's the kind of outcome, I wonder?
Exactly. And I think there is, you know, research that people find that it lowers their blood pressure when they knit. Somebody emailed me actually who's had to do one of those continuous ECGs and said the doctor was querying whether they'd been taking some kind of sedative or something. And she was, no, those are the periods where I was knitting. And they could really see a proper change. Yeah. And I feel like that would definitely be the case for me.
It's like social prescribing.
Yeah, and I don't have that response to scrolling on my phone or checking my emails.
So there's the feedback loop, but also I was thinking about, you know, just the kind of basics of habit formation. You're having something, you're doing it routinely, you know, it will become more automatic. And therefore you're seeing the benefits. It's such a wonderful loop there, isn't there? As you say, that kind of get in the car, I've got to drive somewhere, go to the tennis lesson. It's all of the other barriers that usually sometimes mean motivation wanes. And this is so incredibly simple, but so wonderfully complex in what it can do. So it's not just physical and mental health benefits. There's the social connection. There's so much, isn't there?
Yeah. And I think it can, you know, for those of us who, the thing that took me by surprise, I think, was that after I'd knitted for a long time before I started making garments, like clothes.
Yes, yeah.
More than like accessories. And then I started wearing them to work. And that really took me by surprise, the impact that had. Like I always say, I feel 20% happier when I'm wearing something I made myself. And that had a really big impact, I think, on my body image, on my self-concept, my kind of self-expression and, you know, happiness. And I felt like I'm so interested in how people talk about that. So a lot of the people I interview on my podcast are like me, kind of, you know, knitters with a capital K, like people who do it every day.
Yeah.
And they talk about feeling like it's like a protective shield they're wearing or a comfort blanket. There was a lady who talked about like this yarn had come from sheep that were living in the Pyrenees and were able to survive hardy conditions. And she put that on when she had to go to a difficult mental health meeting as like protection. The hardiness of the sheep's wool was protecting her.
I love that.
I think.
So there's metaphors but outcome measures there, aren't there? Because what does that mean for your ability to get to that meeting or to be productive or whatever it is that you're kind of coping with? Or I'm just thinking as well, because we sometimes might think on these podcasts, because obviously we're both psychologists, we're talking about people who want to come for therapy or therapists who may want to bring it in their practice. But it's also good, I think, to just move away from that and go, actually, sometimes anybody trying to navigate whatever in life, it's quite good to have these little protective factors.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be someone with a kind of a diagnosable presentation to be able to benefit from, knitting for your mental health or your well-being. This could be anybody, you know, whether you're sat in a train, office, wherever you listen to your podcast.
And I think in busy life, you know, like I find lots of knitters talk about returning to knitting after having a child, for example, because that is a time where the time for you is squeezed almost to into nothing, and it's very unpredictable small increments of time. You know, so the idea of being able to do something for me, despite, you know, it wasn't too long before, I think it was with my second child, where I could learn to knit like around a sleeping child on my chest. And, you know, just to be able to find, like, I can find extra relaxation on a bus journey because I brought my knitting along when I don't have time to spend an hour in a spa or do something else, you know.
And that model is much better, isn't it? Because sometimes what we are on social media is quite a game player here, and wait until we have the spa day, wait until we've got annual leave. If I can get to the weekend, then I'll chill. But actually, no, what we need to be doing is these small things every day, you know, the kind of preventative stuff as well.
Yeah.
And knitting is exactly that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I love the fact it's visual. You can leave it out on your coffee table and there it is. Right. I wonder whether I could, you can just pick them up.
Yeah.
Do two stitches, as you said before.
Yeah.
Do more.
And I think it's a great, you know, reminder of like kind of self care and compassion, you know, that I'm allowed to have this little bit of rest, or I'm allowed to make something nice for myself. And, you know, that it's in very tiny increments, it's just helping you with those things.
And do you know what, it's also thought, I did something recently in the media around kind of parenting and the kind of pressures to be ever engaged with them doing something on the floor, doing a jigsaw, but actually kind of research based around letting them play and do stuff on their own, but being present. And rather than being a parent kind of scrolling on the phone, what can we start to do that my mum's in the room, mum's present, but knitting, creative stuff, kind of bridging that gap, if that makes sense, for, you know, allowing children to have their time and not feeling like we've got to be there engaged, but we're also present enough. yeah. doing something, you know, I was ticking so many boxes there.
And modelling something that is yeah. beneficial for your own well-being, actually.
And putting those kind of boundaries in. I'm just doing my knitting. We'll get a drink in a minute, or I'm just going to finish this row and then we'll do X, yeah. Y, Z, you know, because it's quite good for kind of boundary setting. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of people listening that go, a bit like me, and I did say at the beginning, so let's get it on camera, then that will hold me to it. I want to start something. So when I move house in the summer, I'm going to start. I want a tangible thing to finish. But where do you start? And I know you're starting to run more wider things, aren't
yes.
you, around knitting
so,
and helping people?
Yeah. So basically, our focus, so myself and my partner in crime, Paula Redmond, who's also a psychologist, is about talking about helping people use knitting for their mental well-being. So that is yeah. not necessarily people who are struggling with their mental health, but just yeah. on the same way that all of us need to focus on our physical and our mental well-being.
Absolutely.
So as
and
an
I like
extra
that
tool,
model.
But yeah. to do it intentionally, I suppose, yeah. rather yeah. than, because I think knitting can come with its, like anything, with its own traps of perfectionism or being overambitious, or you know, all of
yeah.
these things. So to try and find a way to really intentionally use it as a tool for your self-care.
Yeah.
So we have got, for anybody who's not a knitter and is curious about having a go, like anything, there are great videos on YouTube and there are not so great ones, but we have got on our website creativerestoration.org a tab that says if you're new to knitting. So we have a getting started PDF that you can sign up and receive, and that gives you the complete basics in terms of okay. this is what yarn to buy, this is what needles to buy, this is how you make sense of how they work together, these are some great YouTube videos to do instructional you know, things, this is what you need to learn, you need to learn something called casting on, that's how you get the initial loops on the needle and then knitting. And there are really only two stitches, and you repeat them many, many times. And then some tips on how to use it for your well-being, so that you yes. are kind of yes. using it with that lens, which, yeah. you yeah. know, the tips, I guess, are focused about things like doing it little and often, you know, giving yourself permission to put it in the naughty corner if it's gone a bit wrong. Things like measuring your progress so that you get a sense of achievement. I'm a big advocate of choosing the color that's, you know, speaking to you. If you are
love
I don't
that.
Know
yeah.
excited
yeah.
about spring and you want to knit something in the color of a daffodil, do that. Some tips on great first patterns which are free with good instructions. So we've got also got a blog post that Paula has written about good first pattern suggestions where you don't even need the purl stitch, you can just do with a knit stitch. So yeah, so
that's
those resources are there. And if anyone then is a knitter and wants to take it a bit further, then we've got our course called Self-Care One Stitch at a Time.
Fantastic. I'll make sure all this is in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So that's an audio course for helping you be more intentional. So we're using a lot of the principles of ACT, so acceptance yeah. and commitment therapy, and applying it to knitting in terms of thinking about, you know, using it for mindfulness, getting in touch with your values, because also we can use knitting as a way of connecting with our values, how yes. to choose your next knitting project with this kind of self-care lens, and all of those things, a little whistle stop tour of the research into knitting and mental health. So yeah, so those are some of our resources, and we're planning to add more workshops to the website over the next year.
And remind yeah. me, your podcast, how can people
yeah.
find that?
So my podcast is called Why I Knit. It's also on the website, but it's on all the major podcast platforms, and it's
I'll
me
make sure it's
interviewing
in the show
a different knitter about why they knit and how knitting has helped and benefited their mental health. And I've got lots of guests with different life experiences, like, you know, chronic illness
yeah.
and
yeah.
you know, lots of different mental health difficulties, neurodiversities, ADHD, autism, you know, and lots of, you know, people who've had traumatic events happen
yeah.
to them
yeah.
People yeah. who are knitwear designers, you know, it's not all about mental health necessarily. It's based on the assumption that we all have mental health and
absolutely.
Knitting is one of those tools.
But I like that because that's the innovative bit. It's not just about kind of pigeonholing it, knitting for mental health. And I think that's kind of who you are, isn't it? The podcast is very creative as well. I'll make sure all these things are in the show notes. Now, I always ask everyone, we have loads of nuggets. My brain yeah. is buzzing. I have a convert already. If you could leave us with one little, that's my signature move, one little adversity takeaway, what might that be?
I think for me, it would be think about the ways that you're already being creative or feeling like in the zone, and maybe use those things intentionally. And if you can't think of anything, think back to something you used to do when you were younger and maybe reignite one of those hobbies that you used to enjoy, because A, you'll already know the skills necessary. And, you know, give yourself permission to have a bit of creative time doing something where it doesn't matter if you make a mistake, and you can just lean into experimenting and being in the moment.
I like that, because it's really compassion based. And when you were just talking about your starter ideas and that, you know, because, you know, especially with psychologists, some of us can be a little bit perfectionism, got to get it right. It's just, this is about the process and not getting too hooked on the having to do it perfectly.
But to be kind to yourself, if you get, you know, I make mistakes in knitting all the time. I know that now. I'm an excellent knitter, but I make mistakes all the time. And actually, there are not many things in life we can say that. Like, I'm an excellent parent, but I make mistakes. You know, we don't go around saying that very often.
And so maybe we should do more.
Yeah, I think we probably should. It's definitely made me better at tolerating mistakes, I think, being a knitter.
Well, I'm in a period of transition. So in the summer, when I move, I'm going to do something visual.
Keep me posted.
Simple.
I'd love to see.
And I'll be messaging for help.
No problem.
But that kind of tangible process. Yeah. And I like the idea of having that kind of, I love that idea. Colours that resonate. Doing something that fits with you, that process, I think, absolutely fantastic. I've so enjoyed having you on. I love all my podcast episodes, but there's some that just resonate that little bit more. So I'm going to be telling everyone about this, and I can't wait to get this episode out there as well. Thank you so much for coming on, Mia, and
you're
welcome. To see you again as well.
Yes, likewise.
Thank you for listening to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Quintarillo, and it's been lovely having you along to listen to this episode. If you want to find more about me, you can find me at drtara.co.uk. So you'll see everything I'm up to, my media work, my collaborations, my clinical work, if you're interested in that. And of course, all the other episodes of the Adversity Psychologist podcast. If you're interested in coming on, you can also contact me and let me know what you would like to come and talk about. I'd love to hear from you.